fuzzy in here. Can you announce that to everybody?
All right. Good morning, everybody. Good news, bad news. The good news, actually, it sounds really good all of a sudden. Apparently, the feedback or distortion or alien influence, whatever it is that we're hearing, is only in the room, in the chamber. It's not on TV, and it's not interfering with closed captioning. I'm going to push my luck and just hope that it's good. It sounds good right now. So this, of course, is the Financial Sustainability Budget Savings Work Session. And just as sort of a reminder, we also have a special council session immediately following this. But without further ado, I think we'll just push forward. Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. My name is Tom Reinhart. I have the great privilege of being the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Portland. The Mayor asked me to organize these budget priority sessions in response to a long document and process that Bill Farver did on behalf of the city last year that you are all aware of. I'm going to talk a little bit about how we got here today and give you some background and context. I'm going to walk through the goals of what we hope to accomplish today and also seed the conversation for the October 9th work session, which is an extension and a continuation of this one. And then my colleague Claudio Campuzano from the Budget Office is going to do some background and context. And then the highlight of the session is our hope that Council will engage in a budget priorities conversation around how you want to direct our bureaus, at least the start of the conversation, to the budget cycle for FY19-20. So how did we get here today? We have had literally hundreds of conversations about how to strengthen the budget process and adapt to the growing pressures we all face in an expanding city. I don't think it's a secret to anyone that demand for services is rising as the city continues to change from a town to a large metropolitan United States city. Over the nearly 2 years I have been with this organization, I've listened to these discussions among council staffs, directors, and staff at many levels. A broad hunger exists for a more stable and predictable process with more focus on council priorities and trade-offs that we all face. Before the last budget cycle, as I mentioned, Mayor Wheeler asked Bill Farver, a former colleague at Multnomah County, who also had experience in Portland Public Schools and Mount Hood Community College with budget processes, to observe what we do and make recommendations for improvement. Bill did that, observing budget advisory committees, council sessions, mayor and mayor staff meetings with bureaus and the budget office, independent CBO meetings, and also interviewing many bureau directors. It was a thorough and comprehensive process, which I know you saw reflected in the long report he submitted. You have all received copies of that. Bill is here with us today. Thank you again, Bill, for that Herculean effort. We appreciate it. A foundational element that was identified in that work, which was mentioned again and again by many of our colleagues across the city, is that we tend to focus our discussions with you as a council on marginal decisions, cuts and adds, instead of driving council policy directives through base budget construction. In other words, in maybe more simple terms, the council debate on cuts and adds each spring obscures deeper policy choices and prevents us from driving towards the outcomes you expect us to deliver on behalf of Portlanders. I recently had the privilege of attending the International City-County Management Conference in Baltimore, Maryland. While my study of different public entities could hardly be described as scientific, I asked leaders from more than 10 cities about their approach to budget development. Each of them has a process for identifying shared priorities and crafting a budget to achieve them over many months, most of them connected to strategic plans over years. No one I spoke with structured their budget with a simultaneous process of proposing cuts and adds like the one our organization has grown accustomed to over the years. We are confident that working with council to craft priorities and link them successfully and seamlessly with budget development will take longer than 1 year, much longer. But it is best practice, and it gives us the opportunity to be both clear with our bureau teams and also with the communities we serve. So, next slide. Three budget improvements that the mayor directed the budget office and my team to work on based on Bill's report. Earlier prioritization, earlier focus for the hundreds of people in the bureaus that work on the budget. Today, and October 9th, begins that work. We know that work will be ongoing. A move to program offers instead of our previous budget submissions, a program offer model. We'll talk more about that on the 9th. strengthen community engagement, which is being led by the Office of Civic Life and Director Sukri. Again, that is not a focus of today, but those are the three improvements that the mayor asked us to focus on. Goals for today. Next slide, please. We hope to educate council about the history and context for the Cal minus one approach, and the budget office will walk us through that. We will be setting up the council's shared priorities and outcomes sought discussion later in this meeting agenda. We will outline the directives to develop concept, and we will prepare more discussion for that on October 9th. The mayor asked for a couple minutes to talk about how he hopes this will improve our process. Mr. Mayor.
Yes, and I'll keep it fairly high level, but as the bullet points say, stability, predictability, and transparency. I'm hoping that over the course of this process, we'll have an opportunity to discuss what our core obligations are as a municipal government and what kind of funding it takes to do a good job with those core obligations. Longer term, we have to be able to fund those core obligations predictably. And as you are well aware, based on some of our past budget presentations, and as you're going to hear a little bit in the coming slides, given the financial situation our city finds itself in, it will be very difficult to predictably fund core obligations and core council priorities unless we're very intentional about it. And I think this process can help lead us to that conversation. Part of the concept here is also to be realistic with the public in terms of what our scope of control is, what we are capable of doing, and what our obligation is to the public we serve in terms of funding services on an ongoing basis, and what that actually means in terms of future resources. And then we need to be transparent, of course, with what those requirements are. I believe the program offer piece of this helps get to that degree of transparency. I believe engaging the City Council earlier in terms of what my colleagues' priorities are helps us with that process, because it signals to the public the direction that we're going and the decisions that we've made about what our core obligations and responsibilities are. And it also sends an important message to our Bureau leadership in terms of where we're going and what sort of program offers that we would expect. And it allows us to focus more on the base budget. If we know what our priorities are and we're clear about it and we've agreed as a council, then that should send a pretty strong signal to our Bureau leadership about what kind of program offers they should be putting forward and where they should be spending their time and energy in terms of helping us to get a budget in place. And then last but not least, moving towards long-term goal setting and planning. It would be my desire that we use this process to create increased financial stability for the city, for the programs, for the boroughs, in terms of what we choose as priorities, and then that will in turn enable us to do better long-term planning and enterprise-wide management. So those are some of my objectives.
Thank you, Mayor. Claudio?
If I could just, Tom, one more thing. I really want to reiterate, it's very important for me to hear from my colleagues. What I'd rather do is have a proposed budget that reflects our priorities and is perceived as much as possible as a collective effort, as opposed to here's the mayor's take on the budget. Because realistically, we all know with this form of government, if I put a proposed budget out in front of my colleagues that's too far off from what their stated priorities are, the time and energy and staff work that went into preparing that budget is probably largely wasted. So let's start from the beginning and make sure we get it right the first time.
Okay. Great. Great.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor, Council, Tom. Claudio Campuzano, Interim Director of City Budget Office. So before we move on to the questions of what to prioritize in this next budget cycle, we really wanted to take a step back and look at where our priorities have been over the last decade and how they manifest themselves in terms of where we spent our resources. So Tom and the mayor have talked about making the process more predictable and stable, and really the structure of the general fund can actually be an asset in that effort. As you can see, while growth is typically slow due to the interaction of measures 5 and 50, it generates a reasonably consistent upward trend as property taxes grow at or around their 3% maximum. So this graph shows that, you know, over the last 10 years, the growth in the general fund has been pretty considerable, and at about $179 million, or 48% over 10 years. That's an annualized rate of 4.1%.
To interrupt because I know that Commissioner Fish would join me in looking at the trajectory of those two. There's a kind of a clear turning point in 2014 when we started to recover from the recession.
Absolutely.
And I'm really proud of our city for recovering the fastest of anywhere in Oregon and for the work that Mayor Sam Adams in particular did to make sure that we got back up.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. And I think last year, harkening back to the work session for kicking off the budget process last year, I think the city economists showed what every other city went through during the recession, and the fact that at this point they are back to where they they were before a big dip. And as you can see, we never actually had a big dip and had a slowing that was was slower than the pace of the growth of our costs for sure, but ultimately was a lot smoother than a lot of other locations. So we never actually saw nominal declines, certainly relative declines compared to our cost structure, but somehow, you know, these last 10 years have seemed hard, and so next slide. So really, over the same period, we've asked bureaus to put forward reductions in 8 of 10 years, and I think this gets at what Tom was saying about sort of this process of cutting to add and doing those things simultaneously. So, you know, much of this has also been driven by off-cycle changes that have committed us to new spending, and the biggest component of these is labor agreements and other settlements. So much of it has been
if I could just mention and put out there, there are some potential external liabilities that could impact this budget. We don't know what all of them are, but there are certainly some issues which could potentially impact the budget going forward. And at some point, we might have to work that into the budget.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the elements of the process change for this year around program offers and around trying to build within a constrained budget and you know, reducing the number of decision packages by having council really direct the development of ads. But I think that as we go forward in the process change, one thing that we're really going to want to do is tighten up our process around financial planning and really looking out at some of those legacy liabilities and other issues that we know are out there and figuring out how do we resource those and plan for the future. So, why don't we move on to the next slide? So this slide tells some of the story about where we've made our investments. These bars represent nominal growth over 10 years, and you can use the inflation bar, which is a little red one, and the general fund growth bar, the green one, as sort of guideposts for this. I'll caution you that really every bar tells a story, and not every story is about growth in service. But, you know, clearly the biggest one, and not unsurprisingly, our investments in housing and homelessness over the last decade have really been our most prominent in terms of changing our portfolio of investments. So starting the conversation, you know, it started with the conversion of Serial One Time. We made some additional investments subsequent to that. And led more recently to the creation of the joint office with a significant additional infusion of resource, followed by the conversion of more serial run one time in this last budget cycle. So really a pattern of continual investment in the housing and homelessness service delivery structure. Parks, very different story. Really the growth in the general fund here has largely been to support existing levels of service. We started with the backfill of the local option levy, which was a 2002 levy that was intended to backfill earlier cuts. So this was that was really a maintaining service by adding $5 million of additional general fund. Then there was also the recreation arbitration at about $4.7 million in costs. So that was also not it did not result in an additional level of service, but really affected our cost structure. And finally, growth in the system funded by tax increment and more recently, system development charges. We've been building a lot of new, and that's resulted in considerable operations and maintenance costs as is appropriate as we build out the system. So, some of that growth has been for enhanced levels of service in areas that have parks infrastructure, like Director Park is sort of in this 10-year window. But we've also seen a lot of growth in areas that have not been served quite as completely over the last couple of years.
I have a couple of just brief comments. Commissioner Fritz and I were just talking about the League of Oregon Cities that had its meetings this weekend, and for the first time we had a statewide meeting around the issue of homelessness. Mm-hmm. And I found it profoundly impactful to be in a room with mayors from places like the Dalles and Kaiser and Cottage Grove, talking about how the homelessness issue is significantly impacting their communities and how it's changing their budget outlook. And so this is, I think, a really graphic example of how the dynamic around housing and homelessness has really created, I don't want to use the word drag on because that's not fair, it's created another top priority for the city of Portland on top of the other things that the city of Portland already did around transportation and public safety and parks and everything else. And it's become a significant draw of general fund resources.
And I would note even that this is just the housing portion of it. As Tom knows, his facilities folks have gotten significant investments for campsite cleanup. Parks rangers have been significantly impacted by camping in parks. We've got the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Their complaints for abandoned autos and RVs has grown considerably. So we've seen it not just in that specific housing allocation, but and through to the joint office, but also across the board in a variety of services. It's been very impactful.
The city and the county are now through the joint office. If we combine the little bit of federal and state funding with our county general fund and our city general fund, we spent $72 million last year on homeless prevention, shelter, and the transition to housing. Going back a decade to when I was county chair, it was probably single digits in terms of the amount we were spending by comparison. This really has become a significant budget buster for us. The second thing I wanted to raise is really a question. Why is the Bureau of Transportation reflected?
So this is just general fund discretionary, ongoing. So it's a very small piece of what they of their total revenue. So this is really just looking at the general fund
pie. Does that include the voter-supported gas tax?
No. So this is just general fund. And so really, if you actually look at their total general fund budget, they actually have grown. It's just that now it comes in one-time chunks from capital set aside. You've also got we did reduce their ongoing several years ago related to the utility license fee. But they only receive their base was I think $11-ish million, and so it's been reduced by several million. But they actually make up a very very small piece of the general fund.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I'll note the two bars in between the growth in general fund and inflation, police and fire. While these are, relatively small compared to some of the other areas where we've invested, because of the sheer size of those budgets, those actually have made a pretty significant impact on where the dollars have gone, and we'll see that in the next slide. So unless we have any other questions about what some of the other stories are related to these bars.
Claudia, no question, but just a comment. It's really hard to read this slide package, so just if we could make a pitch, if for the next one, just to have it be pumped up, even if it's a couple extra pages.
Absolutely. Sorry about that. And we will definitely address that. So moving on to the next slide. So this really gives you a better sense of, where the total dollars have gone, where that previous one gave sort of a relative perspective based on, the growth in those individual functions. The main point here is that while we've significantly increased our relative investments in areas like parks and housing, public safety, particularly in the form of increased labor costs, have been a very significant driver in where the money has gone. So when we talk about labor costs, I'll note that between initial reductions at the beginning of this 10-year window and increased staffing recently, police is really only 10 FTE higher than they were in 2008-09. So when we talk about the increase in dollars, we're really talking about an increase in the cost structure and not necessarily an FTE.
Claudio, I couldn't hear you. Did you just say that the police are only 10 FTE above where they were in 2008-09?
In 2008-09, yeah.
The cost structure has grown.
That's correct.
Precipitously.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, happy to take any questions on this slide. Otherwise, we'll move on. Okay. So, it really summarized it with the bar chart. But really, to put a fine point on it, it's very much been a question of labor costs over the last 10 years. Of that $178 million, about $122 million has gone to personnel costs. That's a 43% increase compared to the 48% increase for the general fund as a whole. So meanwhile – oh, I'm sorry. I usually speak fast, so I'm trying to speak slower. I know. I've addressed it by speaking softer. Of the 178 million, $122 million has gone to personnel costs. So that's a 43% increase. Meanwhile, staff levels across the city, and this is not a general fund figure because it's very difficult to measure general fund supported positions over time, but they've only increased by 10%. So really, what makes up the rest? Salaries overall have increased by 30% in nominal terms, so that's not adjusted for inflation. But you also have health benefits that have increased over 50%. And PERS costs, exclusive of the pickup that we cover, have more than quadrupled over the 10 years. So while they don't make up a very significant portion of our budget yet, the trajectory is pretty impressive.
What has quadrupled?
PERS costs.
Oh, okay.
So the reason for that is over that time, rates have gone up. They've more than doubled. But then also you compound that with the growth in personnel salary costs, and you get that quadrupling of the.
Claudio, speaking of PERS costs, mm-hmm. You may not have this at your fingertips right now. I was looking for some data mm-hmm. on the city's website about our unfunded actuarial liability and our funding level, and it looked to me like the latest data was 75%, but that was in 2016. Do we have updated data?
I don't have it. Is it possible that...
Okay, thanks. If you just send it to me, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
So that's really at a high level sort of where we've been, and we want to spend the rest of the session really talking about where we're headed, but... So if you want to keep moving through that. So going into 1920, and ooh, that's very small. The guidance that was released by the mayor last week reaffirms the budget note that was part of the 18-19 budget, and that bureaus should build their budgets with 1% less than what would have otherwise been in their current appropriation level. So I'll note that this early signaling of next year's constraint is really a key piece of some of the changes that we're trying to make to make this process more stable and predictable, to give managers the 14 months rather than the 2 months to start thinking through how they're going to address some of the challenges that we're trying to work through. While the good news is that with 1%, we're unlikely to need additional reductions, the less good news is that we're also unlikely to see much more in the way of new resources appear in the forecast. I'll note that this is the earliest that we've put down a marker about the forecast, and increases in the that really increases the size of the error band that we're looking at. So we have tried to be conservative so that we don't face additional cuts later. But I'll also note that in recent years, a typical increase in ongoing general fund that we've seen between December and April has really been $3 to $4 million. So even, and it has gone up as high as 8 or 9, but it's also been, we've also seen a little bit of a decrease at some point. So in terms of what we might see later in the forecast with this guidance, there will not be a lot of general fund discretionary. One thing I'll also note is that the interaction between 2017 cuts, tax cuts, and the increased business license tax might result in a lower level of confidence around the forecast, just because we're sort of in a new environment with how businesses are reacting to particularly the 2017 tax cuts. So, and Josh will speak more about that when we do the forecast update later in October. So. Finally, before we move on to the priorities discussion, I'll note that there are several items that Council has specifically identified as priorities heading into 1920. While I'm sure there are others, these are the ones that we've already heard explicitly signaled that you're interested in taking action on. And so those are $2 million for ADA improvements, and that's on an ongoing basis in PBOT and Parks. They were both directed to request CAL target adjustments, current appropriation level target adjustments for those. And Parks was requested to ask for consistently $500,000 each year for their major maintenance until such time as they felt that they had a stable and predictable resource for rebuilding their assets. So there are a number of one-time items as well. The joint office obviously is a large one. We still have a significant one-time item, a one-time amount that we added in 18-19. The Anderson lawsuit, we still have payment to make on that. And then also Mount Tabor, we've committed to the neighborhood that will continue to contribute up to $4 million for the restoration of the reservoir. So those are the things that we've already heard. But with that, I'll turn it back over to Tom, unless there are any questions.
Okay. Now on to the main event. And as much as I know that our colleagues respect Claudio and I think that they are present here to hear the priorities conversation. I sent out a few prompting questions related to commitments that the city has made via the council decisions in previous years to try to help seed the conversation. But this is really your time to help us get directed for how you want us to develop a budget.
Well, I'll go ahead and jump in and just start. I've been making some notes here as we've been discussing this in anticipation. Obviously, the issue around homelessness continues to be, from my perspective, the issue. It's certainly the one I hear the most about, and the city has approached this with a sense of urgency, and we need to be able to continue to approach it with a sense of urgency. I'm concerned about the percentage of funds going to the joint office that are one time only. I don't see the homeless situation being resolved in the near term. And I believe it needs to be approached as though it were a significant priority for the city of Portland. And that suggests something other than one-time-only resources going towards it. We made good inroads last year, but I think we have to continue to work on that issue. Livability continues to be, I'll just speak for myself, it continues to be a priority. I don't see that as being a major area of expenditure, but I think there are things that we can do around trash collection and litter collection, basic livability services throughout the city, and there's some good partnerships that we could leverage there. Public safety continues to be a concern if we want to decide as a council that we would like to prioritize community policing, then we need to talk about what that actually looks like, what it is, what it looks like, and get some broad buy-in on that. There was a strong desire last year as we talked about public safety and homelessness and that intersection to talk about what kind of partnerships we need with the county, with the state, and other local providers around addiction services or mental health or domestic violence services, job training, and the like. And I'd like us to have a broader conversation about that prior to getting into the nitty-gritty of the budget. And last but not least, actually second to the last, and not second to the least, infrastructure. I think this council has made a strong commitment to parks infrastructure, to transportation infrastructure, to accessibility infrastructure, and I want to make sure that that remains front and center. We collectively passed the Build Portland initiative a year and a half ago, and I think that was a good start, but there's probably some other ideas we could shake loose there. And I'd like to work with my colleagues on critical staffing questions. Commissioner Udaly has been an outstanding commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Planning, or excuse me, Bureau of Development Services, and we've had some really good conversations around staffing levels there. There are obviously some staffing questions in the Bureau of Emergency Communications, which Commissioner Saltzman is now responsible for. And there are undoubtedly other areas where we have some critical staffing needs, and I'd like to see if there isn't a way through this next budget process to prioritize some of those critical staffing needs and see if we can chip away at them. So those are just some of the priorities that I'd like to put on the table, along with whatever my colleagues think.
Pardon me. So, well, that all sounds great to me, Mayor. I guess the only thing that I would like to add is that, and I shared this with Claudio yesterday, I'm just really hoping that we can engage the public in a much more meaningful way and that may involve a harsh reckoning about some of the things that we're spending money on right now. Because in my mind, in the middle of a housing crisis, in the middle of a homeless crisis, without adequate resources for people who are experiencing mental illness and addiction, we really need to triage the city and triage the budget and ask community members who are better off, who have historically been much better served, to step up and fill in the gaps of some of the non-essential stuff we're doing. I know that the Tabor Park community just raised $100,000 for something they want up there and realized that the city wasn't going to do. I'm not suggesting that every neighborhood has those resources, but it does seem that, and not to call out Park specifically, but we can't do it all, and people are angry that we're not doing better with these essential things around homelessness and livability, then we need to engage them in a really honest conversation about what we're going to have to give up in order to address those basic needs
Commissioner Udaly, I want to state that there have been frequent conversations among bureau directors at monthly meetings and smaller group meetings that echo your sentiment. There seems to be a sense, and it links back to what I said in the intro about, as we continue to try to meet the demands of a rapidly growing city and the policy direction of council to respond to those legitimate demands, there seems to be kind of fraying at the edges around how do we continue to run the bureaus the way we have since decades past. And we are facing now real serious choices about some things that to many directors, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, believe we're putting some things at threat because of our response to creating new programs and doing things. And that's just a part of growing pains. But I think you use the term reckoning. I think internally we have to do that based on the direction you give us and to create some scenarios for you to really serve the council around. If you want to achieve these outcomes, we may have to change the way we're doing some business in other areas. So I appreciate that, and I think that you'll find a positive response to your own bureaus and to others across the city.
Thanks.
I think we've done a good job. I want to echo what Commissioner Udaly just said about of finding the partnerships where we can. I feel like the council did a good job last year working with the business community on the business licensing tax for specific services, most notably the transition from the streets or shelter into housing. We found an additional $3 million thanks to that partnership. And this council has made a commitment for permanent supportive housing. And I think we're very, very close to an agreement with Metro and Multnomah County and Travel Portland and others around a targeted source of revenue that we agree on that could help us support those efforts. So we need to really continue to be innovative and creative in thinking about what partnerships could exist.
Let me jump in. First, I have a question and then a couple of comments. You know, one of the slides took us down memory lane in terms of past efforts to get the council to go through an exercise where they identified cuts, even when we knew we weren't going to take them, to help identify core programs and non-core programs. And the truth is, it never really worked as intended, and it did cause an enormous amount of anxiety in the community, at the Bureau, and ultimately probably an excessive number of Washington monuments were offered up. So I guess one question I have, and I don't need an answer today, is it the mayor's intention to take 1%? Is it his, is he going to reserve the flexibility to take the, 1%? Is it his intention to reserve the flexibility to take the 1%, at least recommend the 1% that he deems to be the most fruitful? And then given that not all general funds bureaus have prospered equally, will he be treating all general fund bureaus the same, or does he reserve the right to treat them differently? So that's a question as we get into the guidance. But let me put a couple extra data points on the table. If ballot measure 102 passes, we'll be able to probably stretch the tax dollar on the remaining housing bond expenditures by at least 50%. I hope that's a floor, not a ceiling. If 26-199 passes, we're looking at about $250 million for Multnomah County in additional resources for affordable housing, and there are quite a number of projects that are shovel-ready. So that's good news. When I joined the council in 2008, we had what was then a structural problem around housing and homelessness, particularly homelessness, where most of our funding for the homeless services, and it was a fraction of what we're currently spending, was funded with serial one-time money. Mm. I think it's very important that we opportunistically convert as much as possible to ongoing. So I think that needs to be a priority. When we get our forecasts and we figure out how much one-time and ongoing money, I think putting homeless services on a strong foundation and just getting out of what we all concede is a bad budgeting practice of serial one-term funding is a priority. I want to just make a comment that I think we also, in the area of housing and homelessness, need to do a better job of aligning who is actually being asked to spend general fund resources to tackle the problem. So, for example, embedded in the parks budget is some funding that goes to rangers and others to do things which, if we were to back that out and just make sure that all of the housing and homeless services were reflected in one line item, parks would get a credit for some of the expenditures that they're currently making, and I will be advocating for a better alignment. So that, not because I think it's inappropriate for parks rangers to be doing some livability work, but I think that they should be funded out of a different pot for work that they do that goes beyond the core mission of parks, because parks rangers are not exclusively in the business of doing housing and homeless service work. I'm glad the mayor mentioned permanent supportive housing, and I'll be looking for the 10-year roadmap for how we're going to fund the service side, and that goes to what Commissioner Udaly mentioned about how we deal with addiction and and mental illness. Just in the addiction side, we are fourth from the bottom nationally in addiction services as a state. We're 50 out of 51 in terms of access. So, we're fourth in the nation in terms of need, and we're 50 out of 51 in terms of access to services. So we sort of get a failing grade at both ends. And the default has been increasingly asking local government to pick up the slack. Permanent supportive housing is one way we do that. But these were traditionally functions that were covered by the federal government and the state government. And it is, I think, regrettable that we're being asked increasingly to take on, and the county government, and we're being asked to take on responsibilities which are not part of our core mission. So let me summarize. We're going to have, if things turn out the way we hope, we're going to have a substantial amount of new money to spend on building and preserving affordable housing. We've got to figure out how to provide the service side of that, and so Section 8 vouchers, PSH, and other things. But that would be at the top of my list. And then we have to continue to convert a one-time to ongoing opportunistically as is available. In terms of parks maintenance, which for me is a close second, I want to back out stuff that's being done by parks employees that otherwise should be funded out of a housing and homelessness pot. We're willing to do our part, but I think there has to be a better alignment between the services and the funding. Mayor, you mentioned Build Portland. I think we have to look at ways of being flexible with that spending, particularly in the areas of major maintenance. And we really haven't opened that conversation. We haven't reopened that conversation in light of some of the challenges we face in terms of major maintenance. And I would throw in the unreinforced masonry debate, because we're going to have to come up with some offset. And that is at least one pot of money. And then finally, I just want to acknowledge that you can look at the slides that we got, and you can tell different stories. There's a story, though, that I think is missing from the slides, and it goes something like this. From the teeth of the recession in 2008, for about 5 years, certain bureaus took it on the chin, and Parks was one of those bureaus. Now, the reality is that the numbers are masked a little bit because of a decision by a mayor to put a team program in place, because of the additional O&M that accompanies Commissioner Fritz's ambitious plan to bring parks equity to East Portland, and because of a couple of other decisions. But what it masks is that Parks currently has fewer people doing parks maintenance today than they did in 2008. That's not sustainable. You cannot continue to grow the pie and ask people to do more with fewer bodies. It's just not tenable. While the recovery period has been robust, it's been robust not in the core areas where Parks needs bodies. It's been largely driven by boutique initiatives like, again, the teen program, like building in the O&M, which is council policy and other things. So I think under livability and Parks maintenance, we have to take a good hard look at the complement of workers and ask some tough questions about, do we have enough people doing park maintenance? And from the initial briefings I'm getting, the answer is no, but the 10-year numbers mask the steady erosion of people doing that work. We cannot promise people a vaunted livability without having people delivering that work. So for me, housing and homelessness, livability, parks maintenance, major maintenance, public safety, something in that order, Mayor, as a first cut. And with the nuances that I've enumerated, and so thank you.
Good. Well, first, thank you, Mayor, for stimulating the conversation, and Chief Administrative Officer, Budget Office, for all the work that's been done. I think it's very clear that we could improve and should improve our budgeting process, and in some ways, this year is going to be a relatively easy one to do that if the current appropriation level stays somewhat flat and bureaus are mainly asked to reorganize their budgets rather than adding. we had, as I noted on the previous slide, 2 years of the 10 that I've been here that we actually took a breather and did something like that, which then gets to be more like biennial budgeting rather than the constant changing. But so that it makes it a little bit easier. But in the commission form of government, the budget process is not only about setting the priorities and allocating the money. It's also the opportunity that all five members of the council have the opportunity to hear from each of the bureaus to find out about things that are going on in different bureaus that we either haven't ever been in charge of or are not currently in charge of, and to weigh in based on the cuts and adds about things that we like or don't like in those bureaus. That's the one time we get to allocate the money to do things that we might want to do in another bureau if we were in charge of it. So I think it's really important to recognise that although your discussions at the national level are useful information, the commission form of government is what we're working with here, and we need to respect that we're not just trying to get from A to B, we're trying to learn along the way, and the council has this opportunity. I cannot possibly meet with 25 or so directors between now and next week, or even now at the beginning of the budget, to ask what's going on in your bureau, even if I have to ask my colleagues for permission to meet with their bureau head to find out what's going on there. I think there should be a process whereby the commissioner in charge works with their bureaus to decide what are the priorities and then puts those forward, and that's the menu of things that I have to choose from. I also am very concerned about just the question, what do we mean by priorities? I mean, just because obviously housing is a huge issue, does that mean we don't fund anything else? The principles that I used when we were looking at the 2014 bond measure expenditures and the system development charges in parks was that we would prioritise using the equity lens where those resources went, and everybody would get something, because it's not reasonable to expect we could sink every last dollar we've got in this city into the housing issue, and as the mayor just said, because it's a Oregon issue and a national issue, not a Portland issue, we still wouldn't take care of all of the issues. So I think it's really important to recognize that there are other livability issues, including parks and community engagement, that need to be funded. I'm 28 days into my new assignment, so I'm only starting to figure out what would the Office of Equity and Human Rights need in terms of having 11 people who are charged with the equity work throughout our 6,000-member organization. The Water Bureau obviously is different because it's rate-funded, and still there's lots of things. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to have a conversation with Commissioner Fish yet about how I can be supportive of his priorities in parks. So I was very happy to hear your suggestion, your thinking on some of the things that you'd like to do there. Obviously, from before I got on the council until now, my priorities have been equity, parks, and community engagement. And so those are not things that I think can be ignored, because we have these other challenges that we need to address. The other question is, you know, under the Saltzman principle, which I don't know whether we're going to keep calling that after next year, but under the Saltzman principle, we know that because of the conservative nature of the forecasting, which I appreciate, there usually is a little bit of ongoing and quite a lot of one-time money to expend. If we don't have a lot of packages on the table, then we're choosing how to spend that money from not the entire universe of what the city does. And everything that the city does is something that somebody wants to have happen. It's over the course of the recession, and particularly the year that we had to do 10% cuts, or was it 25% we had to put on the table with the first year? No, it's 25 million that we had to cut the first year of Mayor Hales. We certainly scrubbed everywhere to look. You know, I often say if there was a magical bucket full of money somewhere, Sam Adams would have found it, and if he'd have left it behind, Matt Hales would have found it. And similarly, you've been scrubbing the budget for two times now. And so there isn't a huge gap there. And in fact, as Commissioner Fish said, a lot of the bureaus made their cuts by cutting administration, and particularly in parks where planning and administration went really downhill, not in terms of the quality of service, but just in the amount of work that we're asking a fewer number of people to do. So even the 1% Cal cut, which is supposed to not impact frontline services, it's not possible to do that in some bureaus because they're already stretched so thinly that you can't make that cut. And so where are we looking at an equitable redistribution of funding, especially knowing that police and fire are the biggest chunks of the general fund, and if they're not putting up cuts that are going to help other people or other bureaus, we, again, have to be more cautious about how we set our priorities. So I am concerned about when we have the additional money, how we're going to prioritize that. I agree with the principle that we shouldn't do ongoing needs funded with one time, except where absolutely necessary. And to me, the joint office, hopefully at some point, we are going to turn the corner on housing and houselessness. So that would be one that we need to weigh priorities in terms of ongoing stuff, because we all know it's really difficult to hire quality folks if it's a temporary assignment and or only one-time funded. And yet there are some needs in all of the bureaus, I'm sure, where we need additional staff because we've got more people in this city. So that's part of the conversation as well. And then finally, I think there's always a backstory as well. And, you know, you mentioned the Mount Tabor reservoirs, which Commissioner Daly then questioned, is that a priority? We have to do that. It was a land use decision that we are required to do, and we wouldn't be making our drinking water more safe by having disconnect, by not using the open reservoirs. If we had not come to that agreement to settle the land use case, we'd still be running up the Court of Appeals to the Supreme Court, probably. So, you know, this, I appreciate the budget office, the equity office, the chief administrative officer, digging into all of the bureau issues, because there's always more to take into account. And so my final question then is, how will the community participate in setting these priorities? We've, you know, actually laid out a laundry list of pretty much everything the city does has been mentioned. And how are we going to ask the community, do you want us to not fund parks in order to fund housing and houselessness, or do you want us to put more money to police or not more right. money to police, those kinds of things?
I know you're itching to get in, Commissioner Daly, but can I just respond really quick? So Office of Civic Life under Director Reese's leadership is working on this, and justifiably they haven't been quite ready to roll out any models until we go through a couple of these sessions with you. So this is a different process to move that from the budget office to Civic Life, and we're very aware that we need to give some options to council for the engagement on priorities. I will say I think your points are well taken, and we are going through a parallel process with bureau directors on our responsibility in this process. So when you raise the point of, you know, we could have ongoing in one time, two of you have mentioned to me in my short tenure here that we work best when the bureau directors provide you full information and options early so there can be some discussion and debate. Our process has lent itself historically to lots of end work and not a lot of front-loading work on priorities and options. So assuming if we make the assumption that we do have one time or ongoing, the better prepared we are on scenarios and packages for you related to your priorities, the better the conversation is among you and your staffs around where does that one time go this year, where does the ongoing go. And I think from the nodding of my colleague here, that has been the experience, that we as professional leadership have felt a little bit underprepared and not doing the best job serving you in those final few weeks of the budget cycle because we haven't gotten some of these questions cleared earlier and we haven't been able to present the options as thoughtfully as we want to. Is that a fair assessment, Claudio?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think that one of the goals of these earlier sessions is to start to ventilate what some of those priorities are and the question how will we know all the things that are on the table? Ideally, you know, we won't be in a situation where on January 31st, February 1st, when bureaus submit their budgets, we have, like we did last year, and it's very typical in years past, $33 million of requests that every one of which represents sort of expectations that have been generated throughout bureaus and in the community, and rather really honing in that list to those things that really meet the priorities that folks have been talking about today.
Sorry, Chloe.
So I just wanted to back up and elaborate on an issue Commissioner Fritz raised, which is while I'm generally supportive of this new approach, I don't necessarily think that it is fair or equitable to ask all bureaus to do this, to offer up the same 1% cut. with the Office of Equity and Human Rights being a relatively new bureau, still building capacity and not having adequate staffing to really carry out what they've been charged to do, I don't think it's reasonable to ask them for a 1% cut. With the Office of Community and Civic Life, although it has been around since the 1970s, it's gone through a massive, the office has taken on and been assigned more and more responsibilities by council without necessarily being provided with increased FTE or funds. I want to say hello to this classroom coming through here. Hi, guys. Grant High School. This is actually my son Henry's classroom.
All right. Welcome.
I don't see him, though, which is a little worrisome. Did Henry make it to school today? Okay. Hi. Okay. Sorry, guys.
Always a mom, right?
Yes. Sorry, let me gather my thoughts
again. We'll give you a minute to get back on track.
We are in the process of, revisioning community and civic life, building capacity, professionalizing our bureau. We're about to undertake a really vital census project, which is critical to the city, that we capture as many people as possible in the census during a time when people are vulnerable populations that we desperately need to have counted are afraid to participate. And so trying to cut our budget by 1%. There he is. Would really potentially undermine those efforts. So I'm suggesting that we may have to come up with an alternate scenario for these really small, lean bureaus that are doing an extraordinary amount of work with very limited staffing and resources.
Okay. Other thoughts?
Could I just get some clarification? You said that the public process for the budget is moving from the budget office to the Office of Community and Civic Life.
I think that it's more that we're really engaging in a partnership with Civic Life. Since we were created as an office about 6 years ago, we initially had the support of a large bureau's communication staff to run a full community engagement process. Since then, we really only have one administrative staff member on our team, and that's our executive assistant. And while I think that we've done a very good job of sustaining the process that we've had, I think that we are a team of analysts and not community engagement experts. And so I think that working with the city's community engagement expertise to really figure out how do we do this right is a very good step in the right direction. We really look forward to continuing the partnership.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I agree. Again, we do have the commission form of government, and the budget office answers to all five of us. Commissioner Udeli is in charge of civic life, so I would assume then that you will be making the rounds to clear whatever it is that you and the Office of Civic Life has decided upon, and then the rest of us would have some input into whether or not we think that would work.
If I could add to that, I thought one of the things that was really lacking in last year's budget process is we didn't do a budget 101 with the public. And I think there should be an opportunity where people can come to a freestanding meeting with their questions. And the truth is, one of the responses that we get to that kind of suggestion is, well, that will be a very self-selected group. Unlike our public hearings. I mean, yes, there are some people that are more motivated than others, but it seems to me the goal should be to make sure that we're talking about baseline information. And there are some people that have the time and the motivation to go a little deeper. So I think there should be a budget 101 session that people can come to, and it should be in an accessible location without the council. I also think we should go back to having a skinny version of the Budget 101 before we have our public hearings. And there should be a handout that helps people understand, you know, 10-year trends, where we are, because without that information, it has a predictable, you know, rhythm to it. And I think we got to get in front of that by making sure that people understand baseline information, and therefore that we can say to someone, appreciate that you have a passion for this. Is there an offsetting cut that you'd be willing to consider, or if you had to do a forced choice? And I know we're talking about doing a different kind of configuration, maybe putting people around tables, doing different exercises. I'd like to see people engaged in helping us make the tough choices, not just having us come yell at us. And frankly, we're structured to